But I'll just go right into my talk, if that's okay. Hey there, everyone. Take care of yourselves. I have to confess that, I'm in Puerto Rico. My schedule is changing and it's a little hard to get up on top of everything. So my talk is maybe kind of a jumble. I hope it's not too much. And I have been practicing transcendental dependent origination arising, I think. But maybe not practicing, but noticing when it's happening. A lot of my talk will be referring to a talk that Tweri made on the subject. But I'm calling it that, might there possibly be another way? So, I myself, during these times, am going through and have gone through, a lot of reactivity, a lot of discouragement. And too often anger. As Tweri says, this is what happens when crazy people take over the government. I'm sorry, I'm going to be a little political today. But this is my reflection. And so we think that, as practitioners, people in general, this has got to stop. We've got to stop this. This is what Tweri says. But we have to remember that our practice and our enlightenment arises out of dukkha. And our minds must be ready to hear about the possibility of something else arising. Tori reminded us that in her talk that Mao Zedong was a dictator in China. I mean, he was absolute dictator, caused a lot of violence, suffering, hunger, torture, incarcerations, and who knows what. And so you would think that, the only way that it could have been ended was that he died. But what happened was is that he messed things up so much. People were so upset and suffering too much, they couldn't take anymore. And they began to stand up to him. And protesting and standing up. And he resigned. I didn't know that. That he had resigned. He didn't have a clue about what to do. So he resigned. That's why we talked about how there have been so many instances throughout lifetimes where absolute power has diminished itself. Where absolute power had control on everything, yet it imploded within itself. It couldn't hold that, couldn't sustain it. And we don't want to go through that anguish that it takes to change the structure. Because it may take a long time. It may not happen in our lifetime. But we don't have to pretend that everything is okay. And we don't have to collapse and say, there's nothing to be done. There's nothing we can do. The absolute power is beginning to inflate itself. And it may take years to change. But the most important thing is that we keep our calmness, that we maintain our sanity, that we continue to practice, that we understand that that dukkha, that suffering can be ended. And this is how we have to deal with it. We have to remember that. Another example that Tweri gave was about the Kent State. Maybe some of you know about it, some of you don't remember, or some of you do. Well, in Kent State, they had the National Guard come out and they shot protesters at the university that were protesting against the Vietnam War. And it was the killing of those four young people. That didn't end the war, but it changed the tide because it shocked people. It shocked the people in the United States. The people who were thinking, well, those hippies, they're always protesting. But this was a shock. And I think that was what began the tide against the war in Vietnam. And that ended. Another example she gave was how South African apartheid was on for so many years. But we, people around the world, caused disinvestment. They're protesting. I was a teacher at the time when this was happening, when there was the movement of apartheid against the war. And they had artists against apartheid. And I was teaching a middle school class of young people, mostly African American and Latino young kids. And they did music. They did break dancing. We did a show in the school. It was middle schoolers against apartheid. And that ended. And nobody thought that that would ever end in our lifetime. So nothing is permanent. Nothing is permanent. We have to remember that. And at some point, what's happening now is going to change. As I said, we don't know. But this is what we have to grasp. And this is how transcendental dependent origination arising is a part of our practice. Is important for our practice. We must be able to see that dukkha and its suffering will end. It will pass. And in that, we will light up the lights that we have within us. We have light within us, all of us. And those of us who are practitioners believe that dukkha can end and understand the Four Noble Truths. So lighting up that light within us and keeping that lit is part of our life work. And this recognition that there's something else, that there's something else that will change. And it has nothing to do with politics. And it has nothing to do with what's going on out there. It has to do with what's going on in here. You know? Like Tweri says, I may be sad. I may be locked up when I go back to the U.S. But it's not going to matter to me. It really isn't. Yeah, it'll take a while for me to get used to whatever situation it is. But I'm going to still practice the Dharma. And still talk to others about practicing the Dharma. And hopefully it'll be contagious. You see how contagious it is now. It's just wonderful to see the monks. I mean, yesterday was so emotional. I saw them on Facebook. The monks that are walking for peace around the country. Oh my gosh. Hundreds and hundreds of people are waiting by the side to see them. And every evening they give a Dharma talk where thousands of people are there. I've seen it where thousands of people, wherever they stop. So it's contagious. There is There are lights out there. I had a friend, a very good Dharma sister, who passed, and she said, you know, you look at the stars, and you know that there are a gazillion stars out there, and those are lights of all of the good things that are happening, all of the places where there are love happening. I know this sounds kind of weary, but that, you know, what do you call it? Goofy. But I keep that in my heart. I keep that sentiment in my heart. Well, Swery says we might be talking about dreamland, but no, this is truth. This is what we're living now. Nothing is permanent. The absolute control is not gonna last. It's not absolute. And me, I've been an activist. That was my work that I got paid for being an activist. So it's taken a while for me to change the world. I have to fix it. I have to do everything. I have to be out there. But I know now that that is not true. What little I do, what little I can spread, I feel, is what will make change. Because nothing is permanent. And we're not responsible for everything. That's how life is. Yeah, it's taken me a while to understand that. I went and saw your story last week, or the week before last, sitting in this room. This is my bedroom here in Puerto Rico. And my daughter and I are talking in the evening, and we hear there's no way that it wasn't a battalion of bombers flying above us, because it's here, not far from where I am in Puerto Rico, where they have the headquarters, where they deployed everything that happened in Venezuela and continue to. And we heard those bombers, not knowing where they were going, and finding out the next day what happened. So a week later, we're at the local watering hole, which is a really nice waterfall, and families go there and tourists. It's not very big. And I was sitting with my feet in the water meditating, and a group of about 20 or so American soldiers come in to go swimming, men and women. And all of a sudden, I felt unsafe. I felt anger. I felt aversion towards them. It was like I couldn't even look at them. And then, realizing I'm sitting, and in that sitting, I was able to recognize the dukkha that I was causing within myself, and the energy of dukkha that I was about to spread. And so I continued to investigate what was happening within me. And I began to do metta for these young people who are being trained to kill other human beings, who are so young, they haven't even experienced much of life. And with that metta, I was able to smile and feel some joy and smile at them, and they were able to smile back. So it changed the whole energy of the place. Well, maybe not the whole energy, but the energy that I felt and that some of them felt to be able to smile back at me. And I think that that's one example I can give in my life of transcendental arising. And I offer that to you and to us so that we can be mindful when we bring dukkha to ourselves. You know, I'm trying to do that every time I maybe want to fix things. You know, or I'm at the table and I have to say what I want to say. More often than not now, I've been able to stop myself. No, I'm not perfect. I still do and have lots of hindrances. And I'm working on them. But maintaining myself in this day and age and seeing and understanding all the suffering that is happening, all the hatred and the greed and the delusion. I am grateful for the Dharma. I'm grateful for the Sangha, for learning that it can end and that it would change and that it's impermanent. I just want to leave you with another poem. I only got one poetry book here. To Puerto Rico. But she's my favorite. Jennifer Pearson. What do you do when the people who are supposed to love you are kicking you when you are down? The kinder you are, the meaner they are. You put on a smile every day with hope, but face daily sorrow in your children's eyes. You work at meaningless jobs to pay the bills, but the bills never get paid. You hold loving kindness in your heart, yet quickly feel it drain away with exhaustion. I suppose the only thing you can do is find peace in the water as it washes over you in the shower. Count the spots on the back of a ladybug. Help your demented neighbor find her way home. Enjoy the rice in your bowl. Breathe deeply into the scent after it rains. Watch the chickadees drink the rainwater from a leaf. Remember the holiness that exists everywhere. Thank you for listening. You can go ahead, Will.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to share, I loved the quote at the end of the poem, remember the holiness that is everywhere.
Yes.
And I just thought that was beautiful. And a reminder, you know, like in my practice, and what I found is that I can just too often get in my own head and, you know, ruminate over different things. But I don't, just such a beautiful reminder to kind of step outside of that and really open your eyes and your senses to just the beauty around you and step out of that and the suffering that's around as well. But I mean, the main thing, I just want to express appreciation for that poem and that quote. And that's just such a beautiful reminder to step outside, for me to step outside myself and my thoughts and see the wider world. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed that. Thank you. Use it. Ms. Lauren, hello. You're muted.
I think Judith is in front of me, but I'll
Oh,
go,
sorry.
whatever.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all
My
right.
screen is small and
Yeah,
everything doesn't come up
I know.
the way it should sometimes.
Go ahead, Judith, and then I'll go.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you for your talk, Nina. Very pertinent to a lot of things I've been reflecting on. In fact, I think it was it last week or the week before we got to talking about anger and patience and impatience with what's going on and the difference between anger and righteous indignation and all of that sort of thing. And I just keep reflecting on that because I keep going in and out of being angry and impatient with what's happening. And then realizing my anger is not accomplishing anything. This is not what I want to put out into the world. And as you say, this is not permanent. This is not permanent. And then the next day I see the latest outrage and I'm angry again. So yeah, a lot of food for thought there. And I have to say for me, it's still a work in progress. It's one thing to be angry and impatient with somebody I know. I can almost always just melt into compassion because I know their situation. But for the people I don't know who are perpetrating harm and injustice, it's much more difficult. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I definitely can relate. It's like, Mom, so I too am a work in progress.
Yeah.
Yes, I can relate to that. Yes. Lauren, and then Faith, you took your hand down. Okay.
Thank you, Nina. I found, this really rang true for me. And the thing that I made a note to myself about was how I find myself, giving up. Like giving up on the good, the powerful people. I think, why isn't this stopping? Why is this happening? And I keep reminding myself that I have been in a bubble. You know, it's always been there, but I am seeing it now, and it's in my country, and it's right here. So that's been a new thing for me, which I keep having to recognize, that there is, there are the poisons in the world, greed, hatred, and delusion, and there is the other, and we've always been asked to know that, be aware of that, and have faith in the other. So, like the examples, I really liked hearing the examples of the dictatorships and the cruelty that has been going on recently, in my lifetime, and that it ended. And it ended because of integrity and courage and those kinds of qualities and love, like Thich Nhat Hanh. And so I keep reminding myself of those human beings that, in the face of these situations that we would think, of course you're going to be angry, of course you're going to strike out, but it doesn't work. It isn't what is powerful. So I've been reading and trying to support myself with instances, people who are talking about that. And one of the people I read says, we're in this together, we're in this together, and just going down and demonstrating, in my neighborhood or at Cal Anderson, it is important to feel that community. And that is what, the Buddha says, there is another way, there is another way. So I really appreciated that. And every time I start to feel like we're not going to win, it's not going to be okay, I feel some shame for that feeling. Yeah. So it's something I'm dealing with, and I love that poem because it shows you it's so easy, everything around you, you can find the holiness. And actually, I thought your talk was holy, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. I know as you have been, and as you could tell from my talk that I've been, the situation in the world is on my mind, and I've come up with what I call, what I'm trying to practice is noble defiance. Okay. Thomas, can you hold faith? Will you come on and give your wisdom? Faith?
I didn't have my hand up, but thank you. Yes. Well, I'm old enough, starting with the Second World War, that's how old, to know that regimes rise and fall. Hatred rises and falls. And I know it intellectually, but hearing your story about seeing the soldiers at the waterfall, that has the real, had the real power for me. That these are people who are part of the regime, but they aren't the regime. And we're not just symbols of ourselves. We're real. And that our suffering is real and our ways out of suffering are real for us. It has to be personal, individual, in order to have any real power. And also impermanence, I think of at the ultimate impermanence, I'm going to die. So that I am impermanent myself, not only my thoughts and feelings. And that has great comfort for me in a strange way. And your talk reminded me of that too. We will come and go. And our feelings will come and go. And the stars will come and go. And you put it together so beautiful. I loved your jumbles. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thomas. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Nina. Thank you for your very, very helpful talk. And it makes me think about, you know, I'm very interested in politics, and I usually start my day with listening to NPR in the morning for the latest political information from around the world. And I found myself for a long time, it's basically every day I turn on that radio, I hear things I do not like to hear. Mm. So it's sort of starting the day with aversion full on. And what has been helpful is to think about, I remember back in the day, I heard Rodney Smith talk about that if you sort of, if you focus on impermanence, like the things are going to change or this thing is going to go away, you're sort of amplifying your aversion, because you're sort of waiting for, you know, don't like this, you wait for things to change. And so what's the takeaway from that? It's been puzzling me, Rodney said, for a long time. And I think what he's talking about is the clinging. If you cling to sort of the political situation that you like, we know from the Four Noble Truths, it's going to change. And if you're going to get something you don't like at some point, so you've got to suffer from that. So how do you sort of get beyond the aversion to impermanence? And I think it's the things that you talk about, you know, so again, it's very, very helpful. It's the Eightfold Path, as we've all been spending a lot of time on. It's looking for the kindness. It's looking for the happiness in the situation. It's renunciating, you know, the anger I feel sometimes or the frustration I feel as I hear, can I renunciate that and move on, accessing my kindness in that situation? So, yeah, it's big thank you to Rodney for his contribution those days.
Thank you. Thanks, Will. I'm Thomas. Thanks. Candace, good morning.
Good morning, Nina. Thank you for that just gorgeous talk. I too love your muddles. What really struck me in your talk was when you were sitting at the waterfall and feeling the fear and all the reaction that came up when the soldiers arrived, and you realized in that kind of feeling how you would spread that, how that would become how you were treating people, how you were moving through the world. And that's so powerful. That's something that I've been paying attention to, is when I get wound up looking at the news or talking with a friend, I can feel that I become this harsher person. Mm-hmm. And I think, no, this is not who I want to be. This is not what I want to bring into the world. And it's such a powerful reminder, because it moves me right into my body. And I think, oh, look what I'm feeling. And so thank you for another reminder that we have to pay attention to how we're moving through this world and the wake that we're causing. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Yes. And for me also, a part of that moment when I'm thinking about this and realizing it, I've also learned on our journey through the Eightfold Path that is a moment of joy. There's a moment of joy there, like you realizing, and you know that you could change, or I could change. I just wanted to say that. Seuss.
Oh. Nikhil and Lillian were first.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But Nikhil and Lillian. Hi.
Hey. I think, Candace, what you had mentioned about noticing as you consume the news, you know, how is that kind of like changing you and changing like how you're moving through the world? I think that's something I've kind of noticed as well. And I think over the past 2 to 3 years, something that's happened for me is that I've noticed I've been actually just consuming less and less news, to the point where at this point, I'm really not, I used to check Google News every morning, watch PBS NewsHour every day, you know, constantly be kind of like enveloped in it. And I kind of noticed this, like, just like, yeah, this suffering coming from it, where I think part of it is also like how news is conveyed and just kind of how it like kind of like works you up. And I noticed that, you know, it wasn't really changing. The impact it was having on me was negative instead of positive, where I was going out and, you know, I wasn't going out and protesting, marching, or, you know, doing anything like that, but it was also changing how I internally was viewing others. You know, I think like that story that you shared about, you know, that meta you knew that you cultivated, and you know, seeing the soldiers, that was really powerful to me. And I was feeling almost like the opposite of that, right? I think, like, as you referenced, where kind of like it became easy to have this othering of between myself and then people that are in power making decisions, and as opposed to viewing people as being just like me and seeing the distinction between their actions, which are so harmful, and then the people themselves who are just suffering the same way I am, I was really kind of conflating the two. And I think it was actually, I was doing the intro to meditation class, and I think part of that was like taking 1 week and basically going without something that you frequently did. And so I was like, okay, let me not check the news every morning. And I found actually this, I loved it. And I ended up continuing doing that. And over time, that's kind of just, it's progressed. And now I don't, you know, I don't check the news. What I've ended up doing is that I watch The Daily Show every Monday when Jon Stewart does it, because, you know, I want to be, there's a kind of this balance of being informed and knowing what's going on, but also recognizing how quickly do I need to be informed and how important is it for me to be up to date with every single thing that is taking place? And how does that change what I'm doing in the moment? And the means that I'm getting the news is also, you know, found meaningful to me, because at least when I watch The Daily Show and I'm seeing things that, you know, these actions that have so much suffering and impact, at least it's, you're also able to find some humor in just like life, right? And it changes how I'm, you know, processing that news and how I'm kind of been, you know, going through the world. And so, yeah, I think that's something that's been helpful for me. I don't know that, like, by no means, like, yeah, it's just for me personally, that's kind of what's worked. And, I really appreciate your talk and, you know, your sharing of, like, you know, how you cultivated that meta and just, you know, changing your finding that means of, you know, you're separating the people from the actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Nikhil. I found myself, I think many of us have found ourselves in that situation regarding watching the news every day. But I'm not quite sure who said it, but it may have been Faith or Lauren, I'm not sure. We're not symbols of ourselves. That's a good one. I like that one. Yeah. Seuss.
I was struck by your comment, dukkha will pass. And I don't agree with that, in that difficulty will be there. We have been othering and hating each other since the beginning of time, it seems like. I mean, I've been rewatching West Wing, and I watched this episode where the president's wife is describing to some teenagers this part of the Old Testament when Sarah couldn't conceive, and so and yet God promised that she would give birth, and so instead the husband goes and lies with another woman, and she has Ishmael. And then Sarah gets pregnant and has Isaac. And then she says, you know, we're not going to let Ishmael into the family. So and that's on only one part of the world where the Palestinians you think of as the heirs of Ishmael and the Jews, the heirs of Isaac. And they've, you know, so we have been hating each other, othering each other, creating so much pain. And I'm not sure that's going to pass. I think that each of us on the path will have moments like you did at the waterfall, where you saw the ill will inside of you and you didn't want it. And, you know, it wasn't consistent with who you wanted to be, what, you know, all the reasons that you've shared and others, I'm sure. And we've each probably had those moments where we go, oh, right, like Candace said, I don't want to be that person. Mm-hmm. And I've said that to myself too. And thank goodness for the Dharma and the practice that we can have these moments of stopping and going, wait a second. Like the topic of your talk, you said, might there possibly be another way? In a moment, there can be. And that's what the practice, it's next month, we're going to talk about faith. And I think that's what brings that sense of confidence and faith, is that we've each had those moments where the dukkha's still there, but how am I going to respond to it? How am I going to, and it might be language disagreement about the dukkha will pass, but anyway, I was just struck by the history of human beings is depending on how you write it, it's an ugly one. And we've continued to write the ugly history. And in each moment, we can write a different sentence, you know, whether it's that the holiness exists everywhere, and or like our community statement, we're entering into a sacred space. And what do we do then when we're in a sacred space? And anything can be sacred. Anyway, I'm rambling, but thank you for all of what you said.
Thank you, Sus. And I in preparing for this talk, I think I also got to where you said, you know, dukkha may never end. But we also know that we can end dukkha within our own lives, ourselves. So it's like, you know, do we abandon that? No. We continue.
Maybe it's transforming it. That, you know, that I don't,
yeah.
That's probably a longer conversation. When you come back from Puerto Rico, we'll go have coffee and talk about dukkha ending. Okay. It's a date.
Okay. So, yes, Candace.
I just wanted to say what I wrote down that you said was dukkha and its suffering will pass. And I took it at that moment that it was about what I'm feeling right now. This will pass. In fact, it may pass in this moment. And that is so, that is what brings us to faith. I mean, reminds us of faith and brings us into the transcendental dependent arising. So I wrote that down because I thought, yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. I think there's room just for one more comment. Anyone? Thank you so much, all of you. And anytime you're online, if you just get the feeling, I got to share this, please do. Because we can always teach each other. That's what we're here for.